Start your day the Terraway, Northwest London, Wednesday, 22nd of Adar, 15th of March. Rabbi Israel Fein, Shlita, The Life and Torah of the Ksav HaKabbalah, Rabbi Yaakov Svi, Mecklenburg. This week's Torah is sponsored by family Don on the 15th Yatzad, their father, Ben Siyam, and Rabbi Ron Moshe, Alevi Don, as a friend of Rocha. His Yatzad was last Thursday. And also by family Stern and Donna on the 3rd Yatzad, the late father and grandfather of Willie Stern. The Ilan Nishmas of Zeb and Chaim HaKohen, a friend of Rocha, whose Yatzad is the Shabbos.
Thank you very much. And if I may be permitted to add, the Elzeich Nishmas, my late father, Zichron and Lebrocha, whose Yatzad was just 2 days ago, Hoisha Hinda, Sarah Basra Boruch, whose 47th Yatzad it was this year. So the subject that I've chosen is an impossible one to cover in a half an hour, and therefore I won't attempt to give a comprehensive view, but what I can give you is an oversight. The life and works of Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, the Ksav HaKabbalah. The late Dayan Grunfeld, Zichr Tzadik Livroch, in his classical introduction to Rabbi Shimshon Rafal Hirsch's Perush Shal HaTorah, his 30-page introduction, which is a modern classic. He says that if you trace the history of Jewish learning, authentic Judaism has always fought to preserve and to emphasize and establish the link between Torah Shebikhtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. This goes back right to the time of the Gaonim, to the Rambam, to the Ramban, Sefer Kuzri, Sefer Ikrim, Rabbi Yosef Albo, the Gaon himself. And he said, writing as he was about 50 years ago now, he says, in the last 150 years, the new impetus for this battle, really, provided by Haskalah and Reform, became something of a battleground and something which took on a new urgency. And he said that in the 19th century, the 4 major Perushim emerged, whose main purpose was to establish this link. They were the Ksav HaKabbalah, Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, the Malbim, Meir Leibish Malbim, Rabbi Shimshon Rafal Hirsch, and Rabbi Baruch HaLevi Epstein in Torah Tamimo. That was the purpose, really, the fundamental purpose of those 4 modern classical Perushim. So it's impossible, as I said, to do justice to Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, who was the first of those 4 Perushim. He was a grandson of the Korban Oeda, which is the classical Perush on Talmud Yerushalmi. He was born in 1785 in Lissa, the province of Poland. And basically his ambition was not to earn his panosa in Rabbonus, but to go into business, which he was successful with for many, many years. But then, through necessity, through the failure of his business, at the age of 46, he went into Rabbonus and became Rav of Königsberg. He was at the forefront of the battle with Haskalah and Reform, and besides his now classical, modern classical Perush Ksav HaKabbalah, whose very name shows the purpose of this Perush Ksav HaKabbalah, he also wrote a Perush on Tefillah called Iyun Tefillah. But I want to focus today on HaKsav HaKabbalah and what he taught, what he attempted to do, and he succeeded in doing, was showing how the Yud Gimel Midlis of Rabbi Yishmael were not ephemeral ways of kind of mnemonics, remembering memory chazal, but they were actually integral to the text. And as he put it, ba'ach that the ksav v'hakabola, is ba'achdus gemura, is one unified whole, at shelo yeye hevdel ben amitas ha-pshat, there is absolutely not a sliver of difference between the pshat la amitas hadrush. And don't think that they go side by side, they are actually holistically integral. And in this, he was a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, not literally, and Reb Chaim Volozhin, but that was his Derech HaLimud, but he was actually a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. And there were two characteristics of his Perush. Number one, he was fiercely analytical and scrupulous in his analysis of Dikduk, which is a subject today which in the Torah world and the yeshiva world today is not something fundamental. But I remember my father, Zichron Livracha, is saying in Manchester Yeshiva in the 30s, they had a Seder of Dikduk, which was a bit surprising. And besides being analytical in Dikduk, he was very innovative. He was not scared to go into territory where others may have feared to tread. And his Chiddush is quite remarkable, as we will see. The Ksava Kabbalah was published in 1840 and was well received. He was extremely modest. He wrote when he received compliments from Elio Gutmacher, he says, it's not meant for people like you, a gorn like you. He says, my parish is not meant for. It's meant for ordinary people. But it was accepted and it was used as a basis of shiurim. And in 1946, this fourth edition came out, which was what people used for many, many years. It was not the most exciting production because it didn't have the Chumash. And the script is something, you know, that nowadays you wouldn't generally look at so much. But it received a tremendous boost in 2006 by the publication of a new, beautiful production with the Chumash, and the Ksav is beautifully presented. And this is where it gained a new lease of life. He was Nifter at the age of 80 in 1865. And in Königsberg, he was succeeded, I think, not immediately, but almost immediately by the Malbim himself. So let me give you, first of all, in the time that we've got, what I want to do is to give you four examples of his analysis of language, of Dikduk, and his Chiddush and his innovation in Pshatim. And then I want to spend the last part in a quite remarkable treatment of the presentation of Kabbalas HaTorah in Parshas Yisro and a little bit in Kisiso as well. So first of all, just to give you a slant that he went where other people perhaps feared to tread. So when Avraham Avinu said to Sarah before they went into Mitzrayim, Imri Noach Osiot, he said, we're going to devise a strategy here. How can we survive in a country where they are shetufei zimo? How can we survive, you and me, you primarily, I suppose? But he said, we'll try this, say that you are my sister. Why? Leman yitav li vavurech, so it'll be good for me. V'choyso nafshi biglolech, and my soul will survive, my soul will revive. Rabbi Yaakov said, v'choyso nafshi. He was not so much concerned for the physical survival. He was more concerned for the ruchniyistic survival of both of them. And therefore, he says this was not a clumsy pretense at a cover story, if you say, for self-preservation. He says this was v'choyso nafshi. It was spiritual self-preservation. How so? He says, we are going to make an arrangement between us, that you are no longer my wife. And not just by Imri Noah, a cover story, this is what we're going to say. This is for real. Why? Because as we know, the Avos and the Imoros kept Kol HaTorah Kula, right, through the Nevius. But, however, they had the option of either committing themselves to Dinei Torah or Mrs. Bnei Noach. And what Avram planned with this strategy with Sarah, he says, we'll fall back on Mitzvah Bnei Noach. What is marriage, as the Rambam says in Hilchas Ishus? He says, how did marriage originally work? He says, Adam pogea isho bashuk, a man met a woman in this, and made an arrangement between them. And the Rambam also says that this was the same for Gerushin as well. If they wanted to terminate the marriage, it was by mutual consent. And the wife could make a representation to the husband, said we go our different paths. And that's exactly what Avram was doing here. Imri nor achosiyot. To protect both of us, he says, v'chois on nafshi, that at least there won't be an issur of issues. He says, at least no issues. And although they kept the Torah, but when needed, they fell back on mitzvahs b'nei Noach. Imri nor. And the Loshen, he says, is very precise. What is the Loshen of Amira? Amira, he says, is linked to Tamura. Amira, it's not just communication. It's a change in a person's attitude. When I communicate with you, I am no longer the same person, neither are you. There is a Tamura. The speech has an effect. And therefore, he says, we are going to make a Tamura here. We're going to make a seed change in our relationship. Imri no, just by saying you are the common agreement, you are no longer my wife. So this is not a cover story, but an actual truth. And that is the Loshen of Amira, because Amira, just like Tamura, changes a state from one state to another. And that's the operation that we're going into. Very, very mechudishtik. By way of complete contrast, something that we take for granted, you know, we don't even give it a passing thought. Why is a mezuzah called a mezuzah? Chasav tomar mezuzah speisecho vishorecho. He said, what a strange misnomer for a mitzvah, whereby the mitzvah is not described by the actual mitzvah, it's described by the location where you put the mitzvah. The fact that you put a mezuzah, a klaf, on a mezuzah, on an upright, why should that give it the name to the mitzvah? It doesn't describe the klaf, it doesn't describe what you put on the klaf. And also, he says, what a strange brocha that you make, likboa mezuzah. Again, you fix the mezuzah on the, you fix something on the mezuzah. What is fixed? So he says the root of mezuzah comes from the word ziz, or zuz, lozuz. Lozuz means to move. It's a transition. It's something that is moving. And he quotes the pasuk in Mishlei, which says that ziz, hasodeh, is a wild beast of the field. V'ziz soda yireno, the wild beast of the field shall devour it. So ziz, he says, is something that is in motion, something that is in transition, something that moves. In other words, the mezuzah is the focal point of movement. It's the place where you notice, where you see the transition. What transition? The transition in a human being. And a person is always a mahalich. A person is always in a perpetual state of flux. Nobody is stationary. We are all moving from one moment to the next. We have bechira chofshis. And a person, when a person moves from his front door, there is a transition from the Rishus HaYochid to the Rishus HaRabin. You have to take on a certain persona. You have to take on certain precautions by going from the safety of your Rishus HaYochid to the Rishus HaRabin. And vice versa, you have to make transition. And therefore, the mezuzah is the description of a person in this constant state of flux, a transition of a person, where the person should be aware of this state of flux, but likboa mezuzah. But the mezuzah tells you that in this perpetual state of transition, make sure that you have focal points in your life which anchor you down, where you take with you in this perpetual state of journey, make sure that you take with you the perpetual principles which are unmoving, likboa mezuzah. Fix in your life fixed principles which never change in a life which is always changing. What a beautiful pshat in mezuzah. Would it ever occur to us? Kisiso, Parshas Kisiso last week. Something very simple, but I think something very beautiful. One of the Parshas of Shabbos last week, Ach Eshab Society Shmoru. Ach is a Loshen of Miut. Rak is also a Loshen of Miut. Ach Varak, says Rashi Ezra. So I'm not going to go into this, but he says, what's the difference between Ach and Rak as a Miut? And he analyzes that there's two types of miyutim. But putting that aside, we have the problem of transition here from Loshen Rabim to Loshon Yochid, Ach Eshab Sosai Tishmoru, surely you shall keep my Sabbaths, Ki Oshi Beinu Veinichem. It is a Loshon Yochid. So the Mepharshim ask, so whether you say, as the Ramban says quite simply, Eshab Sosai Tishmoru, Tishmoru, there are many Shabbosos in the year. So keep each individual Shabbos. Or, from a point of halacha, Amira Achas, the Shabbosos Harbe, it has an implication as far as multiple Chilul Shabbos is concerned. Shabbos Sosai, okay. But what he says is that Shabbos, he says, is often misunderstood. And he says, as we know, there is Shoma Vezocho, and there's Shvisas Malacha, but there's also Shvisas HaNefesh. And he says, one without the other doesn't go. He says, there are two dimensions to each Shabbos. Every Shabbos has a multiplicity of roles within a person's life. And every Shabbos has two dimensions, the Shvisas HaGuf and Shvisas HaNeshoma. And one does not necessarily trigger the other. A person may think that you avoid Chilul Shabbos and you've scrupulously avoided Chilul Shabbos and that makes you a Shomer Shabbos and that releases the Shvisas HaNefesh. He says, not so. You've succeeded in Shvisas HaGuf, but what's going to happen to Shvisas HaNefesh? That involves a completely different and independent input. And therefore, he says, the two are completely intertwined. For a person to be a full Shomer Shabbos, it's Shomer V'Zocher, it has to be Shvisas HaNefesh, Shvisas HaGuf, and Shvisas HaNefesh. And they work in completely contrasting ways. He says, what is Shvisa for the Guf, which is inaction, is completely completely false for the Nefesh. Inaction for the Guf, but action for the Neshama. So you create a vacuum whereby you create a vacuum in your space of Shabbos, but to inject activity into the Nefesh. And he says, that is the Peshat in the famous Maimon Chazal, which says, if Klal Yisrael was zoicha to keep two Shabbosos, Miyad Nigolin, right? So everybody has different pshatim on that. But he says it's the two Shabbosos of any one Shabbos, the two dimensions of Shabbos. And people somehow skew the emphasis on Shabbos, either in favor of scrupulously avoiding Chilul Shabbos, which is absolutely correct, or spending the time with Shvisas HaNefesh, but perhaps not paying enough attention to Shvisas HaGuf. And finally, on this part, I just want to talk about, again, combination of an analysis of language and be prepared to go to where others wouldn't go. Makas Choshech. What does it say about Makas Choshech? That he was so intense, V'lo komu ish mitachtov shloshes yomim. Right, so we've got to, I mean, those of us who are old enough to remember the thick London pea soup smog, I mean, our children or grandchildren wouldn't begin to understand, but we remember what it was like, the pea soup smog. That's the nearest, I think the Ibn Ezra, if I'm not mistaken, makes reference to it. That's the nearest that we can imagine. But v'lo komu yish mitachtov, that you couldn't get up. So Ksavah Kabbalah says, even a blind person who can't see anything can move. And if you're going to say that this was so disabling, this choshech somehow, was more than a pea soup smog, it was something which actually affected the respiratory part of a person, he says in that case it would be a sekonos nefoshos, never mind not being able to move, you wouldn't be able to breathe. So he says, what is this? So he says that in a few weeks' time we'll be sitting at the Seder table saying the Pasuk Yishalach bom charon apo evro vozam v'tzoro mishlachas malachei roim. Right, so we go through each part. What is mishlachas malachei roim? What was the what did the Rabban Shalom send described as malachei roim? What are evil malachim? And he says, you know what evil malachim are? He said, when a person has got no menuchas hanefesh, and you sit down, and your mind conjures up images which are just not there, which are fable, that you sit and you think the mind can play tricks with you and turn image into reality in your own mind. And if you are living with a false reality, lo komu ish mitachtov, you can't get up. And what's peshat mitachtov? It should say mimakomo, not mitachtov. He said, tachtov comes from the Loshon of techas, or chitas. You couldn't get up because of you were absolutely full of trepidation. You were rooted to your spot out of complete fear. And those people who understand mental illness can understand how the illness of the mind can literally make a person paralyzed. In not in a physical sense, but in an actual sense. So that is mitachtov from fear. So in the last few moments that I've got, let's have a look at Kabbalah Satorah. And he takes the most radical, you have to say it, the most mechudishtik approach to Kabbalah Satorah, which is a combination of his analysis of Loshon and his remarkable approach of Chiddush. So in Parshas Yisro, we are given front row seats at Kabbalah Satorah. Okay, it's marvelous. You open up the Chumash and you're there. Right? Graphic description of the greatest event in human history. Right? So who doesn't want to read what it was like? And what it says is, there was Kolos, there was Verokim, there was Kol Shofar Chazok Ma'od. Right? Very, very moving. But he says, it simply defies logic. That if we read it as it seems to be, that the Rabbeinu Shlalom, for the greatest event in human history, which was the Gilui Shechina, which is, has never been, and never has, was never before, never been since, that this should be described in simple physical terms. Kolos, Uvrokim, Shofar Chazok Ma'od, a wonderful Baal Tzakiah, a tremendous sound. After having said in the Seres Dibros, Lo Sase Lecho Pesel, that the Rabbeinu Shalom is going to come and be Megale Hishchina in physical terms, that they'll all go away and say, I've never seen anything like it. You think that was how it was? So if you're, so how can the Torah describe the indescribable? And the answer is you simply can't. You can't describe the indescribable. So why does the Torah therefore attempt to describe it in such terms? So he says the key phrase comes a bit later. Parshas Kisiso, it says, Umare Kavod Hashem. If you want to know what the Hiskalus Hashina was like, Ke'esh Ocheles Basochahor, Baroshahor. It was like an Esh Ocheles, which again is a physical emanation. What's Esh Ocheles? It's a strange phrase. Every Esh is Ocheles. An Esh can't burn without Ochel, without fuel. But what he says is, when it says that they saw Ma'ari Ke'esh Ocheles, this is not what they saw. That's not what they saw. It describes what they felt. That's what they felt. What's it mean they felt and like an Esh Ocheles? Because he says no two people who stood at Har Sinai experienced the same experience. He says it depended, what you got out of the experience depended on your spiritual antennae. It depended on what signals you were picking up. And therefore Moshe was levado, Aaron was levado, Nadav and Avihu was levado, the Shivim Zakenim were on their own. Each one had their space because each one took away a different experience. And they took away the experience according to the capacity that they had to receive that experience. And therefore, Ke'esh Ocheles, which is a fire which burns according to its combustible material. In other words, a fire will burn according to what you put in. And therefore, when people turned up at Har Sinai, and you had two people standing one next to the other, and one had spent the 49 days from Mitzrayim, anticipating the event, and drinking in everything, and absorbing all the Hiskalus HaShechina up to that point, stood at Har Sinai like Moshe Rabbeinu. And the other person who was admiring the scenery and was completely lost in the Erev Rav, Keisho Cheles, the fire went out very, very quickly. And that's what a wonderful way of describing this whole concept, Keisho Cheles. So therefore, what is the kolos and what is the varokim and what is the shofar? He says the kolos, he says, is not thunder. You only get the word kol with be meaning thunder if it is together with the Lashon of Ram. He says, what Chazal say, roim es hakolos, roim es hanishma. So this kol was not a normal kol. Kolos mashunim zumizu. What everybody felt was a different kol. In other words, these were diverse sounds according to the frequency that you were prepared to pick up. As we know, the dogs have a frequency. They can hear sounds that we can't. That everybody stood at Har Sinai and had different antennae, if you like. Thunder is always with Ram. Kol Ramcho Yechofezun. But on its own, kol is a dibur. It's communication. So there's no mention of kolos uvarokim in Voeschanan, because there was no thunder. And what was varokim? Varokim only means lightning when you get it in association with thunder or rain. Barokim lamotor oso. Barokim is radiance, luminance. It's a perceptive state created for that moment. That was the barokim. And what was the kol shofar? The Mechilta says, kol de'ika shofar. It was a sound which was exquisitely beautiful, from the word shufro. It's a description of the sound, not the instrument. It was a beautiful, exquisite sound, as we say, halleluhu b'seika shofar, the sound, not of a shofar, is the sound of a beautiful, exquisite sound. And finally, when it says Chozok Ma'od, it burst your eardrums, the decibels were high? No. It was a completely encompassing, containing sound. Chozok, as we say, Miut Machzik Es Amarubo. It was Machzik. There was a sound which filled your whole essence. It was Chozok Ma'od, it was all encompassing. It had a profundity and a depth to it, which was never before and never afterwards. It was a sound of shivim lashonos. What is language? 70 perceptions of Torah. This was the chazak mode, all encompassing. And that's why we say the kol tariag mitzvahs were in the aseres hadibros. That sound that they heard, they were able to be mechaven to all mamori chazal, every little dikduk, everything. On the face of it, lo signov. Yeah, anybody can translate lo signov. But through this kol chozok ma'od, it was machzik everything, all encompassing. So therefore, this is not a stretch, really, to see his approach to Kabbalah Satorah, that the Rabbanu Sholem wouldn't have described Kabbalah Satorah in physical terms. And this is not what they saw. Well, from an experience like that, you can walk away, it can be lost in minutes. Kol chazok ma'od, kolos uvarokim, esho cheles. Yes, you can walk away from that. But it's how do you, in the Torah, encapsulate an exquisitely spiritual experience in physical terms? You can't. And the Torah is not even trying to do that. But what he's trying somehow to give us a semblance of is the unique experience which filled them at that moment and from which we still live in from this day. This was the Hiskalus HaShchina, from which that's where we get our Cheshek HaTorah, that's where we get our Muna, that's where we get our Betochen, because that was such a profound experience, never was and never has been since, but it's trickle-down effect, and therefore all this, I think, makes perfect sense. And this is a very bechudishtik approach, but I think, to me, it speaks the truth. Amita shel Torah.
Shkreh.